Chapter 19. Calm follows the storm. We found it so. We rested. I was sore in every bone and muscle. I felt as if I had been flogged. The sea, whose fury we had felt, was dreamy now, ominously so, like a tired and resting wild beast. We felt some apprehension that it might wake at any moment and claw us down again. The last encounter had left us with greatly lessened strength, and we were afraid that the next time one of us, at least, might not get back into the boat. We lay some time, recuperating slowly, but the captain has a job to do, I thought, so I pulled myself to the forward thwart and studied our position. Tony roused eventually, and Jean. "Guess I'll overhaul the gear," Tony said, opening the tool pocket. While he scraped with a fingernail at flecks of rust on the knife, Jean looked about for fish, but they weren't venturesome today. The old gray albatross was with us again. Things were getting back to normal. "We aren't getting anywhere, boys," I said. In the still and sultry air, the raft sat like a lily pad. Jean's dunking had put some life in him. "Let's row a while," he said. Bad hand and all, the boy had guts. "Westward ho," Tony said. We rowed westward for 8 hours. Then, as evening came, we again picked up an east wind, as we had before. Our evening prayer meeting always raised Jean's hopes. "Wonder who'll be first to see land," he remarked. Tony rolled over on his back and raised his knees to his chin. "Whoever does ought to get a party," he said. "Tell you what," I suggested. "Whoever first sights an island or a ship or something that rescues us, or is the means by which we're rescued, wins a dinner from the other two." "Anything he wants," Jean stipulated. "He can pick the place," Tony added. "Hotel, nightclub, anything," I agreed. "Nightclub, boy," Tony said. "If I win, I don't want to collect in Honolulu. I'll take mine in Frisco." "If I get it, it's going to cost you guys plenty," Jean declared. A lively discussion started. I had been around more than the boys. Anyway, they were younger, but none of us was a night-rounder. We talked a while about the famous nightclubs we had read about in gossip columns, and each of us had a favorite restaurant somewhere. We agreed, however, that the winner had the say, and the sky was the limit. At length, talk faded, and we tried to rest. The 26th day dawned wearily. That last 8-hour row left us weak. I know at least that I was never so strong again. Today I noted with dismay that my feet and legs were growing numb. Long days, long nights. Our minds were growing dull. It was a physical effort to talk, and we did little of it. We shook ourselves to a brief mental awakening when I marked the calendar on the gunwale, counting the days backward one by one, and came to 27. "Hey, boys," I called, trying to sound jovial, but I guess I wasn't even fooling myself. "It's our anniversary. We've been in the water a month. The 28th day began a minute ago." Tony's lips moved, but his face and eyes were without expression. "Hooray," he whispered tonelessly. I looked at Jean. His lips were stretched. He thought he was smiling. Next morning, sharks were about. Big ones. I didn't like this very much. I was afraid one of these 7-foot monsters would rush against the boat, which might result in any number of misfortunes. I watched them closely and somewhat apprehensively as they circled about, their dorsal fins out of the water. Jean would have taken the knife and tried to stab the first one that came within reach, but I discouraged this. With these big, tough babies, it would be a lucky stab indeed that caught one in a vulnerable spot, if there were any. I thought the knife was hardly big enough. It was about Boy Scout size. A hard jab against the shark's leathery hide might even break the blade or knock the knife from Aldrich's hand. Any harm to the knife, I felt, would be a major loss. It was our only weapon now. We would have to use it carefully. "Ought to get a meal," Jean muttered. He put the knife away and said no more about it. All Jean was willing to talk about now was food. One big shark was cutting close to the boat. I straightened my legs painfully and leaned over the side, watching him. He looked as though he was up to some devilment, and I didn't like it at all. The other sharks had moved some distance away, probably scouting for easier prey than us, But this one huge beast, speckled like a leopard, evidently still saw possibilities and hung around. Finally, he drifted off a few yards, turned sinuously on the surface, and with one powerful thrust of his heavy tail, shot himself straight back like a torpedo. He twisted to a stop, perhaps a foot away, and seemed to look me right in the eye, his wicked teeth showing. I hauled off and banged him square on the nose with my good right fist. Well, that was one surprised leopard shark. He whirled and whipped away like a scared monkey. I guess he didn't come back. Tony had seen the whole show. He reached over and raised my right hand high. "The winner and still champion," he croaked. My hand was tingling and the knuckles hurt. I felt them tenderly. I hadn't injured my hand, but I had hurt it, and the knuckles ached for a few minutes. The shark's nose had no more give than a block of wood. That's exactly what it was like, as if I had taken a good hard punch at a telephone pole. But I chased him away. We settled down for a while then. The sea was rough, and I was afraid the boat would tip over. We hadn't eaten for a week now. Our last food was the coconut we got on the 21st day, and what strength we had left was ebbing faster. We began to appreciate the luck we had had when we caught the birds and fish. Those chances never came again. Jean's eyes were the sharpest in the boat. In this afternoon watch, on this 28th day, he raised the coconut alarm again. Instantly, Tony and I had out the paddles and made our way crosswind to where the big brown nut rose and dipped on the snapping blue waves. I shifted my shoe paddle to the inboard hand and scooped the prize into the boat. The fiber was softened by the water, as we had found with the other. We clawed the covering off with pliers and greedy hands. We drank and wolfed the rich white meat as fast as we could slice it loose. We divided the haul in equal shares, measuring with the knife. We scraped the inside clean, unwilling to waste the slightest speck. When the meal was over, we rehashed it in detail, commenting on the quality, the texture, and the taste. We tried to estimate its age and argued over the distance it must have floated from the island where it grew. We speculated on the island itself, its probable position, and whether the Japs might have it. We thought we must be nearing land, and we made little bets on when we'd find another coconut and who would see it first. But that was our last food.